Talk Over Podcast, live and direct from Nairobi, Kenya, which I never thought I'd be saying at the start of the pod.
Wasn't on my bingo card either.
Also a massive lie, because it's not live and it's not direct either, wherever you're listening from. Most people listen like 3 months after we drop. But yeah, this is definitely the most unexpected intro to the podcast I think I've ever had to do. Sat here with my good friend Joe Lobel.
How we doing?
Welcome back.
Thank you.
And yeah, like I said, we are in Nairobi, Kenya. And now there's a lot of people scratching their heads like, what?
Crazy, yeah.
Is this the right podcast? Am I in the right place? You are indeed. So I had a show here tonight. I have a show with RD. And when I was on social media about, what was it like? I think it was like 2 weeks
ago.
Yeah,
not long ago. 2 weeks.
I seen you post about 2 weeks ago that you're going to be in Nairobi. And it just so happened that our dates were one day apart.
The exact same weekend. And you were there a day early when I had my show. And I had nowhere to be for a couple of days. So now I've stayed for yours. It's crazy.
And here we are. And we thought, you know what? It's going to be perfect. Let's get a podcast in. So first of all, to everyone listening, I apologize in advance if the audio of today's podcast is not up to its normal quality. Because I'm traveling, I'm on different microphones. And these microphones, as you can see if you're watching the video.
Yes, we look like we're at an old school grime cipher.
Looks yeah, like I found it in Nairobi, Kenya. Because it is absolutely not brand new. So yeah, but we're here. How was the set last night? I mean, obviously, actually, we've spoken loads of the stuff we've already just chatted about over the last yesterday and today. It's probably stuff we're going to talk about again now today on the pod, because I think it's quite interesting stuff for everyone to hear.
It is,
I've always found, like, DJing in another country, even though, like, I'm a very confident DJ, can be a bit daunting sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. I'm super confident, obviously, well-traveled, really lucky to have traveled to loads of places, but, like, the first time I get to anywhere, especially like a new continent, you know, like I feel comfortable going to Berlin the same way I feel going to Athens, the same way I feel going to, you know, Marbella to Ibiza or whatever. But like going to Kenya, the middle of Nairobi, first time ever, like no idea what you're walking into. I just, you know, I've got randomly a fairly strong following in Kenya, like from, you know, when you look at your social media insights stuff, I've got a solid following in Kenya. So I was looking forward to it in that sense. But yeah, I had no idea what to expect after a long day traveling, you know, 11, 15 hours or so it took me to get here via Brussels. And then you land, you've got half an hour to flip round and then go out to a club where you've got no idea what even the dance floor looks like, let alone the clientele, the music they're going to want. So daunting. I was a little bit, not nervous, but definitely
it is. I honestly think daunting's the right word for it, because even with like our set tonight, what we're doing is it's like a festival thing just outside of the city, and obviously like they're not coming from me, I'm supporting RD for his thing, but I have to do a DJ set before he comes out.
Yeah,
I've been doing my homework, brother. Like it's like you say, it's a whole nother continent. This is an entirely different culture.
Yeah.
I met a Maasai warrior yesterday. Yeah. This guy's killed a lion with his bare hands. I'm not bullshitting you. Like, this is worlds apart from like what I'm used to DJing in. So it's like, it is a bit, where do I go? Like, where do I take
100%.
It? 100%. Because these are the sets as well. Like for yesterday, I guess you did like a lot of prep beforehand. Like I know you got a couple like local edits and stuff.
Yeah. So on the flight, well, before the flight here, I messaged the local resident who'd like had a hand in booking me, and I was like, "Look, bro, do me a favor, like, tell me some artists, maybe some tunes that are absolutely guaranteed Kenyan shutdowns."
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was like, "Right, okay, I've got you." He sent me a little pack, and I was like, "Right, okay, so let me try and put my spin on it." I was on the plane making mashups, like, "Okay, I'll put this one over the Not Like Us instrumental. I'll put this one over the Ski E instrumental."
Yeah,
I can still do me, but like with a little nod to, you know, where I am. Like, yeah, don't worry, I did some research.
The Not Like Us one went off yesterday
I was,
you know, there was a balcony up on your left hand side, like where I was watching, like, the crowd while you were playing it, when you played the Kenyan Not Like Us, like there was a pocket of guys that knew every bar.
Yeah, and
like,
they
were just in awe of the fact that this was playing. They were hearing this.
Yeah, that's that. Like, I love that as well. You know, you go somewhere new and it's like you know, they'll be like, who's this guy? Come over from the UK, like, thinks he can come to Nairobi and just play a set. And then it's like, he's playing my favorite tune right now, like, but he's mashed it up. And I did a wordplay yesterday with a Kenyan song where I heard words that sounded similar to something else, and I did it anyway. A few people were like looking at me like, what the hell?
Yeah, I must have missed that part.
You'd gone by that point.
That's sick.
But yeah, so I toured Asia this April, and it was the same. Wherever I went, I was like, right, what's popping? What's local? Who's you know, banging right now? And I was playing in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur, and these guys were like, right, this guy is like the hottest guy in Malaysia right now. Like, so, you know, the Malaysians like US rap, UK rap anyway, but they have their own pockets of music as well that they like, you know, local artists. And he was like, this artist is really doing the rounds right now. So I got his latest tune, and it said the word like non-stop in it, and I did like a little wordplay with non-stop, and the Kuala Lumpurians just like lost their shit, bro. What is this guy? He's playing a local artist and he's mixing it with like a Drake trap instrumental. Like, they were going ballistic. So I love adding little sprinkles of flair in sets,
you know,
like that.
Nowadays, for us as DJs, I think that's so key to, like, if you're traveling about, is key to just tap in to like the local currency when it comes 100%. To music. I know Andy P does it. I think he's actually one of the first DJs that I was really aware that was doing it. Yeah. Where he was actively like, right, what is popping here?
Yeah.
And either doing his own version of it, because he does some sick edits.
Oh, right? Yeah, I know.
his edits are not spoken about enough. Like, Andy's edits are unreal.
Andy the GOAT.
And, but the tricks I've seen him do with some of them as well, with like the local tracks.
100%. 100%. Like, he'll get like a hugely popping international instrumental, and then he'll throw localized acapellas over the top.
You know,
and stuff.
One of his that really stuck in my mind was when Sench and Dave dropped Sprinter, there's a line in it about SUV.
Yeah.
And he does the wordplay with, I think it's a German
with
artist
Luciano,
called Luciano SUV.
Yeah, yeah.
And like how he did that and when he did it, like the place he was playing it went off. But I'm just like, this...
Yeah, it's clever.
It is, yeah, it's just... when you're playing internationally, being creative and trying to still do your own thing, but show the locals like, yeah, I know about your stuff too.
Yeah, yeah, 100%, 100%. It's important, and I think, you know, we're saying internationally, but even domestically, like if you're playing to a certain demographic in a certain city in the UK, there might be a upcoming rapper in that city, and you can show a nod to that.
Even actually using my own example, when I've done tours and stuff, if I've gone into different cities, when I'm doing the warm-up, I'll always draw for theirs. Like when RD did his first UK tour, Millions song Lagger. When we hit Birmingham.
Of course, crazy.
Bomb.
Yeah.
Straight. Do you know
and
what I mean?
Lotto Boys and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, all of that stuff. So like in Brum, play some Birmingham artists. In Manchester, play some Manny.
100%.
Like, yeah, so you're right. It does 100%. Actually translate back to local. We had this conversation last night, and actually this is something... We had this conversation based off of what Craig and I were talking about last week about having the equipment. And like DJing is kind of like the smallest part of what we do nowadays, because we've got to do everything else.
Well, like just for the audio listeners right now, I mean, we're two DJs sat in a room with two microphones. There's three cameras that I can see just now. I can see tripods. Double's got lights set up.
Yeah.
There's battery packs, SD cards. Honestly, like, just sorry to break the fourth wall, but
that's
become such a huge part of our role now, hasn't it?
It's crazy. Talk me through the setup you had on you yesterday.
So yesterday,
like, it was like, you know that scene in Mary Poppins, the old school film where she's just like drawing stuff out of her bag and it just non-stop.
Honestly.
And your DJ bag wasn't that big either, and it's just constantly coming back out.
Yeah, yeah. My DJ bag runs deep now with camera equipment. I've got like, because I'm doing the vlogging, I'm trying to, places like Kenya, sometimes it's not always feasible to be traveling with a videographer and a blah, 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 because the associated costs are just sky high, you know. So if I'm going around Europe quite often, I'll take someone with me, because I'm, you know, it's a little flight over a hotel room and you know, a fee. But when it's these big flights, big sort of long haul journeys, it's not always feasible. And also people might not have time to take 12 days out to come round on tour with me.
So, you know, so I did reach out to one of my friends who does video and said, oh, could you do it, sort of theoretically? And he was like, realistically, bro, like, I can't take 12 days out of my work to come on tour with you.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there'll be a point where I'm always touring with a videographer. But for now, I still need content. It's still a major sort of at the forefront of my mind. So yeah, I take with me a Sony camera. I take a DJI Osmo for some vlogging. I've got a 360 camera. I've got flashes, LED lights, tripods, clamps, like so yesterday, because I was so short on time, I just threw up the 360 camera.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's the easiest, you know, you just, like we were saying yesterday, but it just captures every angle of the club, the crowd, the DJ. So it's a good all-in-one if you're lit quite well, which I was last night. So yeah, I'll go through all that footage tomorrow and see how that looks.
Happy days. But yeah, and out. So all of that was camera equipment. How much DJ equipment did you have?
Well, I was saying to you, I don't even have headphones. So oh, yeah. I've got a laptop and three USB cables for my DJ equipment. It's mad, really.
And that's it. There you go. So yeah, one of the most spoken about videographers at the moment, Joe Lobel.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just trying out DJing every once in a while, but realistically, I'm a
making
videographer.
Making videos and DJing in between. Are you uploading a lot of stuff to YouTube?
Yeah, I'm trying. Yeah, like I made it a big focus of mine this summer. I did an Asia tour in April, and that kind of marked the last of the winter touring.
Right.
In inverted commas. But then that was from then May onwards till literally a couple of weeks ago. It's been summer programming. So I said to myself, right, I'm going to get into vlogging. I'm going to get myself a quick, easy camera that just pops out, flicks out, and records really well, which is the DJI Osmo.
Yeah.
And I'm going to vlog. I'm just going to vlog the whole summer. Like, you know, every show. I was doing probably two to four shows a week, all abroad. Like, I maybe had one UK show all summer. Hmm. So, yeah, you can imagine how many flights that was and how much traveling that was. But yeah, I said to myself, right, I'm going to do a weekly vlog. Let's see how long I can keep it up for. But yeah, my 20th one is about to go out.
Sick.
So that'll be this tour. So yeah, weekly, you know, it's just like military, do you know what I mean? Every time I get back, offload the footage, edit on a plane maybe, edit when I get back home Monday, Tuesday, vlog's ready, goes out Sunday, scheduled, ready for Sunday, and then I go again.
Yeah. I feel like weekly, that is still a lot. But I think once you get into the swing of it and you've got your patterns and you know, like, right, what you want to film. So I used to do vlogs. I actually did it for a year.
Did you do daily?
I did daily.
Yeah, I remember.
Daily
that
vlogs.
That is insane, bro.
I was in at the, like, straight in at the deep end. And I did it for a year. The only gap that I had was when I moved house. Because when I moved into the new house, I had to have a day basically, or two days maybe, packing up the old house. And then we didn't have internet in the new house for about a week. That was the only gap.
Wow.
And then it was back. But what, I think I didn't do it the smart way because I was filming every day and editing every day.
Yeah.
I didn't build a buffer. I didn't have like editing days and how I wasn't ahead of myself. I was literally like, tomorrow's video, I'm editing and uploading now. And then the day after tomorrow is what's getting done tomorrow. Like it wasn't a smart way to work, and it definitely wasn't sustainable. I'll be honest, I'm surprised I kept up for a year.
That's insane, a year, bro.
It is insane. But actually what's quite sick is documenting the journey.
Yeah.
As well, and having it somewhere where I can look back and be like, the start of that year, I was just doing this. By the end of the year, I'd done all of these things. Like it's very, very sick, like, documenting it. But
100%, and like that's one of the main reasons, you know, like I'm on sort of Instagram and TikTok, I'm quite like metric focused, you know, like if I post something, I'm like, okay, that one didn't do so well, I'm gonna tweet that, blah blah blah. But with YouTube, it's like, this is just a diary, like every week. And I, like I say, we're 20 deep now, and by next summer I'll be what, 52 deep, and like it, they're getting 200 to 1,000 views, really. Like it's not a crazy thing for the ego or anything, but it's just like I enjoy doing it. I enjoy documenting what I'm doing. It gives me a good like
diary of everything I've done, and if there is a point, which I'm not bothered, but if there happened to be a point where it took off and people were tuning in weekly to watch them, they've got a back catalogue of 20, 30.
And that's the thing, what you'll see is the whole rest of them will all suddenly start to go up as well. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just enjoying it for now. And yeah, it's a bit of a killer doing the editing and all the footage and SD cards and hard drives and stuff that you have to deal with. But yeah, I enjoy it, so...
Yeah, that's the key. And that was actually the main reason why I stopped my daily vlogs, was because I stopped enjoying doing the editing. It got to a point where I was like, I don't want to do, like, I don't want to film this and that and that. I'd literally done it for the year and I was like, I think I'm done.
Yeah.
And I stopped doing it. So because I've always had that thing, I did it with radio as well. When I stopped enjoying doing radio, I stopped doing radio.
Oh yeah, I don't think it's, you should, like, if you can, you know, I don't think you should do anything you don't enjoy.
I've always said, I think it's important as DJs that we have to, because of the purpose of our jobs, we have to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, I know you've been somewhere like this where the DJ has stood there looking miserable, playing music they hate.
Yeah.
Just standing there looking like they don't want to be there, and it's like, why are you there?
Yeah.
Just leave. Yeah. Like, no, you're not chained to the decks. Leave and let someone who enjoys it, because... The difference between a DJ that can enjoy it to one that doesn't enjoy it, like, the difference that makes to the whole vibe of the room is wild.
100%. And, like, when you have quite a grueling schedule, if you're not enjoying it, like...
Yeah.
It was really show. Do you know what I mean? The only thing that makes me look alive on stage is the enjoyment. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm not alive. I'm knackered.
Yeah.
So, like, if I didn't enjoy it, if I didn't even have that, do you know what I mean? Then it would... I'd be just like a soulless body on the stage. So
no, I get you. And I, like, there's times where I've literally done what you've done, hopped off the flight, and then you've got half an hour till you're on the decks.
Yeah,
it's like, I think as well, people don't realize how tiring traveling is.
I know,
because really, what you're doing, well, you're sitting down and you might be sleeping if it's long haul. Why is it tiring? But actually, it's tiring traveling.
It is, especially the lanky boys. Like you know the dramas of being on a plane that long.
One of the security guys we're with, sorry, little side note. One of the security guys that we're with is 7 foot tall or something, like, it's ridiculous. I think he's 7 foot tall. I will actually find out. His nickname is Stretch. But yeah, he was on the flight. Luckily, he had the front row in the section of the plane where there's no seats in front of him whatsoever. Yeah. So he literally had about 15 foot of leg room.
He probably needed it all.
Just
as
about
well.
Used it all up as well. But yeah, it is crazy having such a hectic schedule, going to the club and having to be alive.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a little bit of a bad thing, but that's one of the reasons I started drinking energy drinks again.
Oh, really?
Like, the schedule's getting hectic. I need to be on point, so just back a quick energy drink before I hit the set. Yeah, and then I have a little bit of false energy, but it works. It works.
Yes.
Wakes me
chemical,
up.
Chemical sort of enhancements. Yeah, it is. It's, you know, people see the glitz and the glam side. I actually say, usually weekly on my vlog, like, another episode of It's Not All Glitz and Glam with Joe LaBelle.
Right. Because,
you know, it's, you're the party animal, you're in the club, everyone's, you know, sparklers are going off, you know, the strobe lights, woo, everyone's got their hands in the air. But then, like, you get to bed 3:30, your alarm goes off 6:30, you're picked up at 7, you're back to the airport, you're traveling on 3 hours sleep, like, eyes stinging, you know, then you land in an airport that isn't in your hometown, and then you make your own way home, and then you've got the rest of life to deal with when you get back.
Literally. Like, and do you know what it is as well? Like, I find, especially when I do tours, there's like a period, I think I've spoken about this on the pod before, there's like a period immediately after the tour, I'm depressed. It's like post-tour depression hits, because you've had this exciting life of, like, maybe up to a month of doing parties and getting on flights, and it's high adrenaline, a lot of partying, a lot of, like, you know, endorphins are flying every day. It's just a sick time.
Yeah.
And it's back to normal life. It's like, shit, I've got to go into a food shop.
Yeah.
Like, I'm stuck in Maidstone High Street in traffic. Yeah, the lights just come on in the car. I've got to go and get petrol. Like, it's normal life.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's a weird, like, it's like an alternate universe sometimes, where it's like, hang on, like, literally 2 days ago, I was on the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
In front of, like, maybe 50,000 people at a festival. And now today I'm on a school run and I'm stuck behind all these mothers dropping their kids off. It's weird. But I get, like, a proper slump after a tour. Do you find that?
I do. It's definitely I mean, I do, I find peace in being at home, but there's definitely a period that it's just sort of a bit confusing. You know, you've been on the go, 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 and then when you have nothing to do, like for even when, so I'm going straight from here to South Africa, and I'm doing like 6 shows across like 3 cities. And that'll be mad. I'm like in, out, fly, 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 here, back, back. And then I'll just go all the way home, and then I've not got a show till the 26th of, it's like two and a half weeks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself in all that period. Like, it's, yeah.
It's insane. Weird, isn't it? You know what? Where we live in such like a fast moving industry as well. I get times where I might know, like, I might have like a month off maybe, or 2 or 3 weeks off in between tours or in between shows. But in those 2 or 3 weeks, I think like, oh, I'm inactive. So first of all, what do I need to do to keep like the DJ Double brand alive? I feel like I need to be doing something. I might not need to, bro. Like I've just been touring and relentlessly battering everyone on my social media with where I am. Let's give them a break as well.
100%. But then I'm guilty of it as well.
I've got more stuff booked, I get to a point where I'm like, shit, what if I've peaked? What if now I'm on the other side of the slope, and now like I'm being forced into retirement by just no bookings?
That's the thing. Like, I think just about being self-employed, isn't it, in general?
Yeah, 100%.
You're always thinking, oh, if I disappear for 2 weeks, then like the whole world's going to forget about me. 15 people are going to overtake me, and then my place in the industry is going to be lost.
Yeah.
It's probably not realistic, but I'm 100% the same. I'll have those 2 weeks off. I'll edit all the content from the sort of the shows in Africa, and then once I've started sort of drip feeding that out over my socials, if I sort of run out in inverted commas, I'll be fuming. I'll be like, oh my god, I've got nothing to post. I've got no shows.
What do I do?
And then I'm just waiting until I go. I'm doing the Middle East at the end of October, so I'll just be waiting until I get there and sort of get a re-up on content. But yeah, it's stressful.
Do you think there's like a balance? Because I see, like, for example, I think like no one can just be on top forever.
Yeah.
And I think the way it works, if you look at how like artists work, using Stormzy as an example, or even like Cench, because obviously like he's probably like the top of the pack right now. He's not always there.
Yeah.
He'll disappear. And I think people don't realize, because when he disappears, other people take the attention.
Yeah.
Other rappers, you know what I mean? So like Cench might, suddenly there's no releases, there's no like shows, there's no, like, I mean, at the moment, today he's going ham. He's just released like a G-Shock collaboration, PSG uniform, no doubt this is leading up to something, either a tour or a project or something. Do you know what I mean? This is probably leading somewhere, and then it'll be visible. As soon as that is accomplished, he'll almost go again.
Yeah.
And I think the same can be applied to DJs. And I think with DJs, like, I look at what Charlie Sloth does a lot, and I think he's quite a good example. He will suddenly be very visible for a long time. And I don't think it's just my algorithm placing him there. Yeah. I think he's suddenly active. He's got a good team around him as well, doing a lot, but then he'll disappear.
Yeah.
And he's not doing nothing. Do you know what I mean? He's still working, but he's just not in that cycle of, well, let's call it like the cycle of visibility.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's fallen off.
Yeah, no.
It just means for this month or this period, he's not at the forefront of it. But that's cool, because now Joe LaBelle videos are taking over my algorithm. And it's like, whereas if it was just always Joe LaBelle, or always Charlie Soft, I've had it, bro, I've seen it every day for a year. And like, okay, cool. It's just more. So I think like the periods of silence, what I'm trying to say is the periods of silence, I think, actually are beneficial, because it's not overloading everyone. Even though we worry like, shit, everyone's going to forget about me, no one's going to remember, I'm not going to get any more bookings. Yeah. It's actually like, you know what? We're giving them a break from forcing our content at them.
Yeah.
And it lets us have a break from having to do the content. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I think like, I'm starting to come to terms better with it now. Like now I think it sort of correlates like directly to having my calendar sorted for the next 2 or 3 months ish, at least vaguely. Mm-hmm. So I'm not worried. Do you know what I mean? Like before, it was like, I need to stay like so active on socials, because I need to fill this and this and this and this. But now, like until probably like New Year's, I know
roughly at least 90% of the people at places I'm going to be. So it's like, yeah, I can just sit tight. I can get on with those shows. I can still set up my cameras. And then if a new song start coming out or new moments happen or something documentable happens, then the time will be right to like throw some content out. Do you know what I mean? But I still have the fear and the anxiety that it's, I'm not posting enough and I'm not 100%. Doing. But like, I feel I'm starting to come to terms with feeling a little bit better about it now. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good thing, good way to describe it for me as well. Because I do still have the times where I'm like, oh, I haven't posted for ages.
Yeah.
I think one of my probably toxic traits is getting to a point where I'm like, oh, I haven't posted for ages. I'll just post whatever.
Yeah.
Just to get something activated again. Do you know what I mean? And then I'll look through like I've got a content folder of like a backlog of stuff if I ever do need to just be like, I need to post
like
something.
Slow days.
Basically folder. Like, but I try not to be too social media based anyway, because my daily life doesn't support constant. If I blew up off of doing daily content now, I can't sustain it.
Yeah.
So it's a case of people that would tap in for the daily content. Well, I'll probably be able to keep up for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then after 2 weeks, they'll be like, well, where's the content? Oh, I can't do it right now. Oh, okay. Well, and now their attention goes somewhere else.
Yeah.
I've had my moment. Do you know what I mean? So for me, it's like I just kind of put key parts up. I've been quite heavy on the edits recently, which obviously I mentioned in the last pod. So that's the content I've been pushing at the moment, because I've really been trying to push like the edit side.
That's good. I mean, it's good. That's a wicked lane, isn't it, really? Like, just to have edits that people love across the world. And I touched on it briefly with you last night, but like, just the fact that if you make some dope edits, the fact that there's laptops and USBs around the world where your edits are entertaining dance floors, like, it's such a nice feeling. And even like, it's the same with me and my little routines. Like, I know that a lot of DJs just go out to the club and just copy them. Like, people even comment saying, nice, I'm stealing this. Like, I get that on my posts all the time. And I just think, that's fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, it used to annoy me, but now I'm just like, it's good, because I feel like it's kind of inspiring a generation of young DJs to like.
I think we touched on it last time you were on. And it is, it is such a positive thing where it's like, on the one hand, bro, that's my routine. Like, you're posting it. You've not even said, I saw Joe LaBell do this. You're just posting it like you created it. And now 100 people in the comments think that's you. But on the flip side, you didn't just do an 8-bar mix. You didn't do some like lame, boring stuff and post it like. So I think it's good to inspire them.
Definitely.
And I think as creative people as well, when we come up with certain new tricks, and especially like with, so I don't know how you come up with some of the wordplays and stuff, honestly, but like, you hear things differently.
I'm just so in, because that's kind of become my thing, like accidentally, but you know, the first few videos that blew up were wordplays, and now my kind of little pocket of the algorithm, that seems to be all they care about. If I just do a mashup or some scratching or just a hands up moment, that no one's really bothered. Those posts don't perform so well, but if I do a cool little trick, then they love it. So,
do you have a plan of like any way to evolve it moving forwards?
It's hard. I was speaking about this with a friend the other day. Like, it's tough, because like I say, people come to, when they see a post, they're kind of like waiting, okay, what's the wordplay transition going to be? And then if it isn't, it's just, it's just a normal mix. So like, it's hard, it's hard, especially when there's not been hits getting released in our world.
Yeah.
Like, before, the blueprint was, right, what's the hottest new tune? What's another hot tune? Find a link between those two and smash up a dance floor. Like, I try not to do a wordplay that would like actually detract from the party just to get a wordplay in.
Right,
you know,
okay,
like, so it's like, right, which what
actually
hot
that,
tune?
That's, sorry, just to pull you on that part, I think that's, pause, I think that's, I think that's a very, very key point, you know, because I have been in clubs where the DJs have thought of like quite creative wordplays.
Yeah, yeah.
But the direction that the song's going was more tailored for the wordplay than it was for the crowd.
100%.
And now you've killed the energy off.
Yeah.
With a cool little trick, but respectfully, like, no one cares about your trick. Like, this is regular people in a club.
Yeah.
Like, the three DJs that heard it think it was sick.
Yeah.
But you've taken the energy away now. So I think that was actually quite a key thing when planning the wordplays, to make sure if you're doing it in a main set, that it actually keeps the flow and isn't jarring to like
100%. Yeah, I my tips for it would be like, make them pretty obvious, because you know, even to an uneducated or it's not probably the right word, but just you know, Joe Public, normal person going on a night out on a Friday, Saturday, if it's blatant enough and cool, they'll be like, oh.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's the same word. Okay. Oh, and I like this song, and I like that song. Yeah. You know, like, so there is ways to win over audiences, but like you say, you don't want it to be a jarring, long 16-beat thing that's like, what is happening? Why is he just looping the same word for like 2 minutes? Like, this is hell. Yeah. Or like, why is he playing, you know, the Antiques Roadshow theme tune just so that he can get into a tone play? Like,
why is he playing the EastEnders theme tune just because the drum pattern was similar on the last
exactly,
song?
Yeah, exactly. So. So yeah, I think those are the things to just keep an eye out for. Unless you're just messing about in your bedroom, like obviously, then whatever.
Yeah, I think social media content, like little mixes, mixtapes, mixcloud content, bedroom mashups, whatever. I think like there doesn't have to be rules.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think if it's in a club to an audience, I think that's hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
100%. One actual really good one that I noticed yesterday went off, and it was perfect. Fits what you just described. Cardi B up, Fat Joe all the way up.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you were doing it and then you brought Fat Joe in, I could see like everyone knew.
They
understood the assignment.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like they all got it. And then when the tune went, like while I was there, that was probably one of the biggest reactions.
Yeah, which is a crazy sort of, you know, like an example of how poor the music industry is right now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the biggest tune is all the way up, bro. Yeah. Like when did that come out? Like where is these new bangers, man? We've got Fiend and I do a wordplay with that, but that is an anthem, a club anthem. Fair enough. But like
I think Fiend doesn't work with every audience.
No, it definitely doesn't.
For me, definitely I've tried Fiend places and it falls flat.
Yeah, I think in the UK it's very patchy as to how it works.
Yeah,
but
yeah
elsewhere
yeah.
around Europe, it works really well. In Asia, it's like it was like the biggest tune.
Right. Okay.
Everywhere I went.
Sick.
And yeah,
not like us.
Not like us, obviously.
That's been that. I mean, I've not had anywhere that doesn't work.
Yet. No. Yeah. Yeah.
That's by far the biggest.
One of the biggest tunes.
I tell you. So here's the thing. Yeah. One thing I'm getting with at the moment, and this is actually what inspired me to do my Not Like Us edits, is as I'm DJing, I'm getting to that part of the night where, okay, not like in my set, Not Like Us is time. Where do I go after that?
Yeah.
Because it's like, it feels like, okay, well, now this is where all the summer bangers should fit. This is like the new, current, big songs. But on that tempo,
I was just about to say, on the 100 BPM.
Like, keeping that flow and that bounce, I genuinely, the first time I played Not Like Us out, which is what inspired me to then make the edits, I got to it and played it and I was like, I genuinely don't know what happens next.
No, there's nothing.
And I'm usually like at least two or three songs ahead of myself.
Yeah.
But I got to that and I'm like, I don't know where the vibe goes now. Because it's a Mustard song. But all the other Mustard songs are 5 years too old to be played right now.
But this is what I'm thinking. There's a time when we were in the clubs and you'd hit 100 BPM, like 95 to 105, and you've got all the UK rap stuff, the J-Hus, the Afro Swing,
you've got
the Chris Brown Loyals, you've got there used to be so much there. And I used to spend half an hour there, you know, in a 5 hour set, you know, like just cruising through that BPM with like so many bangers. And now, like you say, I actually can't think of one other than Not Like
There's
Us.
Still a lot of great music in that range. Yeah, but even if it's not all, you can't always transition to Afrobeats out of that song directly. Because I find like when I DJ, I think I'm a little bit OCD because it has to make sense.
Right.
So the next song, like there's some DJs that literally can cut. If they're playing hip hop, they can cut from, they'll go Not Like Us into Fiend. And they can just just do it. And I'm like, I rate it because the crowd doesn't care. It works. But I can't do that. In my head, I'm like, how?
No, yeah.
I don't, even when I'm DJing, I don't even make that connection. Oh, the next one, Fiend's a big song. I could cut it out there, even the audience sing that part. And then, like, there's ways of doing it clean.
Yeah.
I don't think of that because it doesn't make sense to me. Do you know what I mean? So it's like a weird, I think for me, it's a restriction that I have that I haven't unlocked yet where it has to flow. It's got to be within the BPM range or the genre. Or I've got what I call like crossover tunes. Do you know what I mean? So they're like, let me think of an example of a crossover tune. So for example, I have a blend. I think DJ Dens did it. Jay Huss, Lean and Bop over Burna Boy. Angelina. What's the song called? Help me out here. Yeah, you know the song. I can't remember the name of it. On the Low.
On the Low, that's
there
it.
There we go. We got there. So I have Jay Huss, Lean and Bop, a cappella.
Nice.
Over On the Low instrumental.
Yeah.
Shouts to I think it was DJ Denz. Sorry if it wasn't, but big up DJ Denz. And so for me, so I will like...
That's how you patch across
I bridge
genres.
The gap there. Yeah. That's how it makes sense. I'll go from like UK rap, I'll do a little Jay Huss section.
Yeah.
Into Lean and Bop. Lean and Bop into the Denz version, or maybe just already the Denz version. And now that's got me into Afrobeats.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
The next song that makes sense would be On the Low.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the instrumental is the same. Or vice versa, if I'm coming out of Afrobeats and I'm playing On the Low, let's reach for the Jay Huss thing, because that bridges me back.
Yeah,
over
nice.
And now, within one song, I'm in UK rap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it all makes sense. And I don't think the crowd deeps it the way
no,
I do.
No, I'm sure they definitely
I don't.
I don't
think anyone
they're not thinking,
is
oh, wow,
18 tequila shots deep.
Blimey,
thinking,
that was a seamless transition between the genres.
He's really bridged the gap here. I can keep my vibe. Yeah, he's
yeah,
really...
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's thinking that at all.
No.
But that's... That's like how I DJ.
Yeah.
It is, yeah, yeah. But yeah, so that's where I'm at. Like, I'm like, with Not Like Us, I'm... I don't know what happens next.
No.
So at the moment, I've got my... I've got Hit 'Em Up on
yeah.
there. I put Big Sean, I Don't Fuck With You.
Yeah.
I put that on there. And I put a Capleton... Was it? Yeah, I put Capleton on there as well. And that now bridges the gap over to Dancehall
yeah.
if I want to go into Dancehall. So... It's
yeah.
I don't know why I think this way.
Yeah.
It works and has worked for me.
Oh yeah, no, it's never going to be a bad thing. Yeah, whether people are realizing subconsciously or not realizing, you know, that it's the kind of thing I think if you do it effectively, people don't realize it will be the opposite that they would realize.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And so. Yeah, it is very evident when suddenly something is so abrupt.
Yeah.
But I think like there was the video of someone going from what was it? Last into Dior,
yeah,
or something. And they were running Dior like 92
yeah,
BPM.
Yeah.
And
I
the girl whose video went viral, clearly she wasn't a DJ. I don't think she was like a music, but she was just like a civilian.
Yeah,
I mean, in very extreme cases, they notice.
Of course, yeah. You know, if something sounds horrible, like you might not know why, but
yeah, they know. But
yeah,
yeah. I think for the most part, you can just get away with all sorts of fuckery.
Yeah. I think you really kind of don't. It depends where you play and stuff. And obviously, for me, I'm playing like an hour, 90-minute sets. Like, they're just power. They're just like banger, banger, banger. So if I kind of mess that up, then people really do notice because I'm playing this power hour. So
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's, yeah, to keep the, like you say, when you get to like a Not Like Us and to try and keep the energy up, like, I have to probably take it up a BPM and go into like My Type and stuff like that. That's
right,
that's the
yeah,
only
yeah,
real
yeah.
place I can take it, because it needs to be that same kind of high energy American, you know, like mustardy, that those kind of
yeah.
beats, like to go
like
straight into something
stuff.
Else would just yeah would just chill it down too much. But yeah, it's tough at the minute out here basically as a
have you found well. Like, again, this is something that we chatted about, like I chatted about with Cable and Craig last week, about the music trends and like club trends in England. At the moment, it's just not vibes.
Yeah, I mean...
And we did a whole pod on it last week.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not vibes. But do you think that's the same globally? I was chatting with DJ Abuse from Berlin last week.
Oh,
he
yeah.
was saying that Berlin's very similar. He was like, there's moments where it's sick. But he said, for the most part, people are just there because everyone else is there.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's no vibe. It's all very weird. No one really knows what to do or what they're even doing there.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, it's just strange. But like, where you've traveled so much this summer, you've seen like pretty much every corner of Europe, I imagine. Like,
yeah.
Are you finding it the same? Or is it different in a summer vibe because people are on holiday?
Yeah, I think there's so many variables. It's different country to country, for sure. It's different even
city to city within countries, you know, like
I
play quite a lot in Germany, so like I will do Berlin, but then I'll do Frankfurt, and then I did a show in Braunschweig the other day, and then like,
say that again.
Braunschweig.
You really put that accent on that as well.
It's the only way I can pronounce it. But yeah, I did a show there. It's just outside Hanover. I did a show in Stuttgart, you know, like various different places in Germany, same as the UK, are very different, you know, like, so that's an interesting thing. But then Germany to Greece culturally is very different. Like the party islands in Greece where it's all Brits, they're one way. Athens, mainland Greece, is another way completely.
Yeah.
Like Istanbul, culturally they don't really dance, so they stand at a table with a drink and bop.
It's quite like Dubai.
Yeah,
that's what I like found
Dubai,
in Dubai. Yeah.
Very like Dubai. So it's different. Every single dance floor, yeah, is completely different, which is like you have to kind of gauge it as soon as you get in there, and then you're like, okay, it's going to be one of these or it's going to be one of these. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. Just there's, yeah, basically vastly different everywhere I go. And I am noticing, I think that everywhere I go, even though it might not seem like it to me, because I'll be like, oh, wow, it's popping here. They're like, oh, you should have seen it a year ago. Or
right, yeah, yeah,
it's not
yeah.
the same as it used to be or whatever. So it's good for me because I keep getting like new environments and it's a change. So I'm always thinking, this is cool.
For you, it
but
is fresh. Yeah.
For
yeah.
them, they're thinking, oh, it's dying.
I'm finding the same, man. I speak to quite a lot of promoters from all different places, and especially even DJs as well, obviously running the podcasts and stuff. Move the bottle just to the left a bit, please. Don't want to mess up the Instagram, content. Even like, yeah, obviously running the podcast, like I connect and talk with a lot of DJs from places. When I'm traveling places, I'll always try and tap in, like Shema the last night, for example. Yeah. Shouts to Shema. But everybody's saying a very similar thing. It's like you say, they're like, yeah, yeah, this is cool, but a year ago it was twice this.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's mad, isn't it?
It's happening everywhere. It's not, I think it's happening quickest and worst in England.
Yeah.
But then again, maybe that's just because I'm there and I'm used to that environment. I know what to expect. Whereas like you say, last night, for example, me and you were in that building for the first time. I thought it was popping.
Yeah, yeah, same.
But then one of the events director, he was like, ah, yes, this is a bit quiet.
Yeah,
he actually pointed towards the event that I'm doing with RD tonight as the reason. He said, everybody's booked to go to tomorrow night,
which is
why we're a bit quieter today. But I was like,
it was still fine for us.
This is a bit quieter. Like, this is still lit in here.
Yeah,
I think because we're used to the climate in the UK, maybe that's why we're seeing it more.
Yeah, 100%, I'd say. And to be honest, I'm so not in a position to comment on the UK really at all at the minute. Because
you haven't been there for 2 years.
No, I just don't play there. And that's not, I always repeat this, like, whoever I talk to, that is not by choice. Like, I would love to be doing shows up and down the UK as well as doing everything else. But the market's just not there. The clubs aren't there. Like, the scene is just not there. You know, I can do some bits and bobs in London. Very occasionally, like an odd event in like a Liverpool or a Manchester, but there isn't that circuit, you know. Like back in the day, the hip hop DJs or the, you know, the sort of music of Black origin DJs. Mm. We need to find a better term for that umbrella, but like there used to be a clear route they did up and down the country. You're playing in Essex, so I assume you're playing there. You're playing in London, you're playing there, Birmingham, and you used to, you know, they'd be everywhere. You'd see, like, as I was coming up, I was like, oh, okay, can't wait to do that route around the country. All those clubs are closed now.
It's crazy, isn't it? I think there's a couple left that I see, and like I see quite a few of my peers doing it, like, you know, people like Jonesy, stuff like that, and they're like Jalou and Tup Tup, both in Newcastle, strangely enough.
Yeah.
But they are venues that are like that. They're on the circuit, constantly booking guest DJs. They care about the quality of music. I think that is the thing.
People don't care.
No, I think the ones that are like the best nights are the ones that care.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like where the promoter or the manager or the owner actually gives a shit about the quality of music.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it's been like a race to the bottom with clubs. Mm. It's coming out of COVID. Like, again, we spoke about the high street clubs and stuff. And it's just a case of them just putting anyone in. Who's cheapest? I don't care. Like, I'll just put whatever DJ. Oh, you've never played in a club before? Come and do the whole night for us. Yeah. Now you're the resident. Like, like, that's why I think a lot of clubs have been in this race to the bottom.
Mm.
Trying to save pennies on certain entertainment because they see, oh, well, this person is paid the most per night. So let's not pay him. Let's outsource his job to someone way cheaper.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you don't realise actually the DJ is the heartbeat of the club.
100%.
And again, it's something I've repeated so many times. If you, in the middle of the night, rammed out club anywhere, take the DJ out immediately. People are not staying.
Yeah.
They're not staying. Take the bar staff out. They'll stay a bit longer, but then when they want drinks and realise there's no drinks, they will go. Yeah. But they're staying for way longer than if you take the DJ. Yeah. Take security out. No one's leaving, bro. Yeah, like, do you know what I mean? Security do play an important part of the job, of the night, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But, like, where, why are you cutting costs at the heartbeat?
100%.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, that's the point I'm making. It's weird. And that's, like I say, why clubs, I think, have been in this weird race to the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, like you say, like, clubs now would rather pay, you know, and don't get me wrong, DJs have to start somewhere. So obviously, inexperienced DJs need to get their first gig, otherwise they'll never get their 100th gig. So
absolutely,
I'm not knocking new DJs ever, but like, you know, they'd rather have a cheaper, let's say, DJ and spend money on like other things in the club, like. Not to knock any other industries either, but like, you know,
no, we're DJs, man. We're here to knock all the other guys.
Sort of entertainment. Fuck those guys.
Fuck them stiltwalkers.
No, but like, you know, they'd rather have. It's become a thing. I'd rather have a spectacle and my DJ just be in the background. Like that. That's just the cult. Seems to be the culture now.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. But a lot of people,
which is fine, but that's obviously
it is. If however you want to run your club is how you want to run your club, but don't then complain when your club's bankrupt.
Yeah, yeah.
Because now no one goes because the actual vibe of the club hasn't been there.
Yeah.
And you've had these people just breathing fire on the stage, but then the vibe's not there, so they just stood watching. Do you know what I mean? It's weird.
And like Cable was saying last week, as I did listen on the way here, like he made the very good point that people are choosing between going out and paying their bills or...
Yeah, literally, that's where we're at now. Yeah.
It is tough, like, which has got to be a huge contributing factor, surely.
I see a lot of experienced DJs, like, they're always onto it on social media, cussing out younger DJs. Oh, you're undercutting, I can't believe you don't like this DJ. I don't think these guys are to blame.
No.
The younger DJs are not to blame, like, because anybody that is a DJ now, if you take it back to when you didn't have any work whatsoever as like just a little bedroom DJ, if a club says to you, come and do 5 hours, I'll give you £100. Bro, I do 10 hours in my bedroom for no £100.
100%.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not the young DJs or the new DJs' fault that these jobs are becoming available for this price. It's the fault of the clubs or the promoter.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where it is that because they're the ones that they don't care for bringing in like what I would call an expert in that field. Do you know what I mean? And the way, like when I got into it, I've said a million times, my first job, bro, was £30 for a set. I used to DJ in the bar from like 8 p.m. until I think about 10. And then in the club next door from 10 till half 10, just the warm up. The first half hour,
nice,
right? £30. I couldn't drive. And I live £25 away in a taxi.
Mate, I did the exact same thing.
So I'm £5 a night up.
Yeah.
But obviously, this is records time, so I'm having to buy records as well as all that stuff. But my point is, I even started on £30 a night for doing the full set.
I used to do 1 hour every Tuesday, £20. And I used to go out. My taxis were £14.
Yeah.
And I used to do it every Tuesday. But like, that was just because then what would happen, the sort of main resident, the first time he can't make a Tuesday, who are they calling to do the
exactly
full night?
Exactly that.
And then all of a sudden you've done the full night and the promoters have gone, actually, that was fine. Like, he can handle this. I walked away with £120 rather than 20 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm buzzing, they're thinking, oh, we can save some money. And then the next year when they rejigged all the gigs, I got a load of, you know, full nights.
I feel like that's the story for a lot of people, but I think what the experienced people forget is that's pretty much how we all started.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we didn't all start on the fees that we're at now. It's taken a decade to get here.
Mm.
And so you can't be angry at the guys that are doing it now. If you're going to be pissed off at the clubs or the promoters or the managers that are handing the responsibility of the entire night to these guys.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
where I think it should be. That's where I think the conversation should be, is that promoters, club owners, like,
it's just margins, though, isn't it?
Yeah, we're all for bringing the new guys in because that's how the culture shifts. That's how, like, everything grows and stays this way.
Yeah.
This is how we don't get replaced by Spotify AI in 5 years' time. Do you know what I mean? By these new guys coming in and being sick.
Yeah.
But don't give a bedroom DJ the entire night.
Yeah.
On his first night,
yeah,
when
yeah.
he's never played to anyone except his mum and dad.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's yeah, it's crazy. One. It's a really weird trade to be in. Because I feel like it's
I agree.
Using the analogy of like a plumber, for example. Like if you want some plumbing work done in your house, you're not just going to be like, oh, okay. Oh, well, you've never plumbed anyone else's house before.
But you'll do it cheap.
But you're cheaper. Interesting. Come on, do the bathroom. It's like, weird, and it's like, no, you're going to pay the guy who's experienced. Of course, he's more expensive.
Yeah.
But it's more expensive because he's been doing this for years and he knows what he's doing.
And the same way you're hiring a bar manager. Oh, you've got no experience. No, you want someone with experience. You hire the GM of the club. You want somebody with experience.
Yeah. There's a quote. I'm going to misquote it because I don't remember it fully, but it's about being an expert, basically, and charging higher than everyone else charges. And the quote goes something along the lines of like, you're not paying me for like right now. You're not paying me. So let's put it in DJ terms. You're not paying me for like the 90 minute set that I'm going to be doing. You're paying me for the 10, 15 years worth of experience that got me to this 90 minute set.
Yeah, yeah.
That got me to know the entire backlog of tunes that I have. Mm. That I know if the dance floor starts to die, how to fix it. That even to the fact that I know if my computer just stops, within 30 seconds, there's music playing.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not screwed for the night. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, this is what you're actually paying for, because I've been through all of these battles and learned everything there is 100%. To know. And that's what I'm bringing to the table as an expert. Do you know what I mean? That's where I think people in our industry forget. So, like, oh, just get the cheap guy.
Yeah.
Well, now the cheap guy's laptop. Actually, that's a bad one because my laptop does this.
Now the cheap guy's laptop
won't connect to the A9 mixer that you've got.
He's still got that 1994 laptop.
Yeah, there it is, behind the fourth wall. It's over there, straining to record the audio for us right now.
Oh, dude.
But yeah, it's a tricky one. It is a tricky one. What is your goal? I've been thinking a lot about this, like what my goal is in DJing. But do you have like an end game?
I don't know. Like it's kind of shifting, obviously, all the time as I achieve more things. You know, like my initial goal when I first started to do any kind of shows abroad, or like before even, like when I was just about to, you know, go do my first thing in Malia or go do my first thing in Marbella or whatever, I was thinking ideally what I'd love is to just get to a point where I don't have to go on holiday to somewhere to see that place. I can just get a booking there and then stay a couple of days. So like that was like my goal, but that kind of, I'd say I was doing that now. Like, you know, if I sort of can plan tours and I can, if I get one show in a certain country, I can normally get shows in the neighboring countries now, which is insane, but yeah, like really a good position to be in. So then the next goal, I don't really know. Like, there's festivals I want to tick off. There's still some places I want to tick off. I'm in the process of sorting out going to one of those places. But, like, Australia and America and some South America, that's about it really left for the world for me to, in terms of, you know, continents or, yeah, like, big areas. 'Cause I've done pretty much the rest. Like I've done a lot of Asia. There's still a little bit left to do. I'd like to do maybe like Japan and China and stuff like that. But it's now just adding to what I've already done. So there's not really, I don't know. The goal is just to just see how far I can go, really.
Yeah.
I don't really know. Like, I don't have a solid, I'm not like working towards solidly anything. I'm just like, just keep going. And if you feel that it starts to plateau or go down, then maybe start to have a sort of crisis meeting with yourself about what you'll do after. But yeah, right now I look back at the end of every year or at the end of every season, I'm like, right, was that better than last year?
One before.
And yeah, as long as I can consistently answer yes.
But I think, like, I do think sometimes that's a dangerous mentality, because if you get to the end of the year and they're like, oh, that wasn't better than the year before.
Yeah.
That's when you get to the point where, like I've said before, if I have like a little dip in bookings, I'm like, shit, am I now trekking down the other side of the mountain? Mm. Like, is this now the decline of DJ Double?
Yeah,
like, do you know what I mean?
That, and it's
like,
I think
having that mentality, or at least for me anyway, having that mentality, I'd look at it and be like, shit, like the year before this one was better.
Yeah.
So, like, what now? Do you know what I mean? Maybe that might motivate you to be like, okay, cool, next year needs to be sicker, then need to work harder next year, this is where I improve. Mm.
I think like that month by month, you know, I'm like, this month's been dead, like, right, okay, I'm getting, yeah, watch next month, it's going to be crazy. I'm always comparing back and having a look at all my social media metrics. How are they doing? Is it increasing? Is it decreasing? Do I need to do more there? How's my shows? Am I ticking off new venues, or am I just recycling? Or it's like right now, we're in Nairobi. That's a brand new thing. I'm going to South Africa. Yeah. That's brand new. At the end of October, I'm doing a new club in Doha, a new venue in Bahrain. Like, I've never been to Bahrain. So like, while these things are still happening, I'm like, okay, I'm still, it's going, do you know what I mean? Like, but if that started to like slow down, I'd be like,
Well, I think last time you were on, obviously, like, we already know about, like, in terms of like the Jolo Bell team, you like ad hoc videographer, like when it suits and when it can. Is there anything else behind your brand? Do you have a manager yet? Do you have like an agency helping to bring in the bookings?
I've got an agent, a team that do the bookings side, contracts, like try and drum up new business or like facilitate things that have come through me, and I'd pass them over. And you know, I'll be like, I think for example here, like I had a few shows in South Africa booked. And I was like, look, Dan, can you just go through all our old booking requests? Because we'll tend to try and group things now into tours.
But
when I first started getting offered to go abroad, I would go to Qatar and back in a day. I was like, if the booking's there, I'm going, like, so I can build that up. But as I've done that maybe 10, 15 times and killed myself doing it, like, but now when I go to Asia, I can do maybe 7 countries. When I got a few bookings for South Africa, I said, look, can you look back through the old booking requests that we maybe put on the back burner because they were just too far to go and do one?
And
he was like, okay, yeah, we've got one from Kenya here, and I'll email them. And he emailed them back and they're like, yeah, amazing, we'll take him. So I
never actually thought of that. I don't know, is that like a standard thing that agents do?
Yeah,
because that's actually a really smart way to operate. I've never even thought about it.
Like he'll often say, you know, we'll get a request for, you know, Antarctica, but we'll get a request for sort of wherever, and if it's a 10-hour journey there and back, he will often say, look, as soon as we're doing that territory, we'll get back to you. So like, then it's suddenly, I usually know a couple of months in advance, so I'll be like, right, in 2 months I am coming.
Yeah.
So it's good for them. The promoter saves on flights. It's good for me. I save on, you know, working myself to the bone.
And
you can group things up. And yeah, it's on the other hand, it's more time away from home, and it's that all of that stress. But it's much better. Like, you know, I went to my first Thailand tour. I did 3-4 shows in Thailand, which I was buzzing for. But I just flew Monday, did the 3-4 shows, flew back Saturday, like. And that's like 20 whatever hours. and then I was flying every day in between as well, between Phuket and Bangkok and Pattaya or whatever. So every day I was going on a plane and then back, 20 hours back. Like, and it killed me. Like, for like a week, 2 weeks, I was like ill. Do you know what I mean?
Like, it's one of those things where, like, to people that don't do it, and I don't want to sound ungrateful because I love it and I wouldn't change it.
Yeah, yeah.
To people who don't do it, it sounds so sick. What, an airport? You're getting on flights every day and doing shows.
Yeah.
Bruv, you do it for a week like that and it's exhausting, let alone like 2 to 3 weeks. When we did our last Australia tour, it was exactly that. It was literally like we land, straight to sound check, then we might have the show that night, or if we're lucky, we have like the evening off and then a show of like a festival the next day that we've got to get to. But then literally as soon as that process is done, to the airport, next flight.
What quite often would be
land early in the morning, sound check, festival, bed, fly the next morning to the next city, land, sound check, festival, bed. Say bed. I mean, there's obviously a nightclub in between.
Yeah.
Obviously after parties and all sorts in between the festival and bed. But yeah, like it's grueling.
Yeah.
And it's exciting, but it's
the other thing, exhausting. like you were just saying, like, the
I think the value in the networking that happens on the nights you're not working is almost more than the actual night you're working.
100%. So,
you know,
yeah.
I, on my last Asia run, I'll land in Hong Kong and I have got a spare night until my show. But yeah. That spare night, if you're not using that going and having dinner and having drinks with the promoters, then you're wasting a day, basically. So those are really important moments. So, like, even when you might be absolutely exhausted, you're like,
100%. If you're, I mean, that's what I was saying earlier, and this is how, like, how I met Shema last night. Who's for everyone listening, heard his name a couple times now. He's one of the local DJs out here in Nairobi. Meeting him, connected with him in advance to coming out here, found out what was popping, what was going on, and then also found out coincidentally he was actually the resident at the place you were playing as well, and so that all just tied in nicely. Yeah. So it was like last night, came down, bumped into you, obviously seen you there, seen your set. Met Shema face to face, so the networking is there as well. And it's like, that was a night off. Everyone else went to bed.
Yeah.
Everyone else on the team, they were in bed by like 11 p.m. Because we had a bit of a grueling day today. So it's like, but for me,
I wanted
to be out. Like, I've spoken to Shema, I'm in his town.
100%.
Let me say hello. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it is, the networking is, I would say, almost as important as turning up for the set.
So important. I'd say, obviously you have to perform and the set has to be good, but I would say it's almost more important. Like, when I go to another sort of continent or whatever, I'd say that the times that I spend, show me around town, let's go for some lunch, or let's have a dinner, or should we have some drinks tonight? But I think they are more important. Like,
yeah.
I still, like, the promoters in Hong Kong, I still have a WhatsApp group with them that they send me, like, funny videos of places where we went when we were there. They still do it now.
This is
9 months later.
Amazing.
And they're still, they literally messaged me, they're with Andy Pannell today, actually.
Oh, okay, nice.
So they messaged me today, like, look, we're with Andy, we're taking him to where we took you, and he's having the same spicy thing that you had, you know, like, and stuff like that. They've got a friend in me.
Yeah.
We'll always work together now.
See, so that's it's but so that, important. That's another really key thing is, I think, early, I've never been good at networking. Mm. And like, from my early DJ career, networking was terrible. And what I didn't really clock was, actually, networking is the first step of friendship.
Yeah.
That's where, networking is all good. But really, what you need to do is change that networking into friends.
Yeah.
Like, people, so even now, like, I've got people, promoters that I haven't played for ages, but I'll message them like, how are you, how are the kids, and we chat, FaceTime and all this stuff, and it's that getting to that part of the relationship is the important part.
100%.
Someone who's mastered that is Martin Too Smooth.
Oh god, yeah.
There's not a human on earth he doesn't know.
I know.
And isn't friends with. Not just doesn't know, he's friends with everyone.
Every time I speak to him, I'm going sort of this continent. Oh, you should try and play here. You know Noah, you know Zach, you know blah, blah. I'm like, no, of course I don't.
It's
he knows the owner of this, the director of this, and
absolutely wild. But he doesn't just know them. He's friends with all of these people. And everybody that like I said, there's not a human I've come across that doesn't know Martin Too Smooth.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And he's just lovely. Like, he's a lovely guy.
Nice guy. He's everybody's friend.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. He's a master networker, but he's managed to get all of his network as friends.
Yeah.
And I think that is the key for us in our job. And it's like you say with the Hong Kong promoters. Mm. They will book you. Have you booked for them again yet? Or
no, but I will go. I'm going to go back same time next year.
Right. So they will book you again, but that's because you've got a friendship with them. You're in constant contact. You know what I mean? And I think the key 100%. Is building these friendships with people, not superficial ones. There will be people that pop up, you chat to, and then you don't really chat to ever again. The chemistry's not there. The friendship doesn't develop. But do you know what I mean? I think it's so key changing the network into friendships, man. Definitely. 100%.
Yeah, because it's like all the little things, you know, like. In next time I go to Hong Kong, if I want to stay an extra night, they might be like, oh yeah, cool, yeah, we'll book you an extra night hotel and we'll all do this, you know,
because
they're cool with me. And like the guy from last night was like, oh, you know, as soon as I got you on email, I could just tell you were just chill. You know, the promoter who ran the party in Nairobi last night, he just said, yeah, as soon as I got you on email, I knew you were chill, blah blah blah. I thought, yeah, it's gonna be a breeze working with him, and he's done the same. He's booked me a couple nights hotel. I just had lunch with him. Like, it's all these little micro moments that just are so important.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly that, man. Exactly. I think, you know what? I think we're done. Is there anything else?
No. Well, we've got a show to get to, haven't we?
I was literally just thinking, oh shit, I've got to leave in half an hour and prep my set. There's me talking about being prepared for sets. I'm about to play to thousands of people. I've got nothing ready. Guys, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. It was a little bit, even though we spoke about it a few weeks ago, getting it done, it was a little bit kind of like just, okay, yeah, let's sit down and do it type thing. So there wasn't really much preparation. So I hope everybody out there listening, first of all, I hope the sound quality's been good, because yeah. I'm not monitoring this, so hopefully this actually recorded and something goes out. time will tell.
If you can hear this, then it worked.
If you made it this far, excellent. But yeah, guys, Joe LaBelle, pleasure as always, my bro.
Thanks for having me, bro, always.
Talk Over Pod. Follow Joe at Joe LaBelle on all the socials. Keep up with his travelling and his journey as a videographer that occasionally DJs. And yeah, at Talk Over Pod on all the socials. Thank you, bitches.
Peace.